Google jumps the gun and then misses the mark. And Microsoft's hoping next Friday is a whole lot more fun than this one. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update. It is Friday, the 19th of October. I'm Jeff Horwich, and happy Friday to you. Some of us need a weekend, as you can tell from my voice here. It's a little rough, but stick with me. Good stuff coming up here, including Walmart's troubles in India and an interview with the CEO of a healthcare company for the very rich and how he maybe someday could help change things for the rest of us.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Wall Street started the day still talking about a big double surprise that we got yesterday. First, Google accidentally fires off its earnings announcement 3 hours ahead of schedule while markets are still open. Then those profits for Google, for a juggernaut that's known pretty much nothing but success, fell well short of expectations. Chris Lowe is chief economist with FTN Financial, and he joins us on many Fridays. Hello, Chris.
Good morning.
So we have Google plus Microsoft as well, with a big drop in sales. Tech earnings certainly off to a rollicking start, aren't they?
Well, that's right. Yeah, it's been a really rough quarter for these guys. And Google, I think, was just spectacular yesterday, the reaction. But a lot of these tech companies are having a difficult time.
And let's talk about what's going on with Google. I mean, they had trouble with their Motorola unit, but maybe more troubling to some folks, less ad revenue than expected.
Yeah, that's right. And look, as an economist, ad revenue is something we always follow. It's a good barometer to general economic activity. I think what happened here is that the economy slowed hard in the second quarter. It used to be that we'd see ad pages in newspapers down, but now it's all online. And Google, of course, is the biggest source of advertising revenue on the Internet. It shouldn't be that surprising. But what it indicates is that companies are fighting now to preserve their bottom line. And marketing is one of those things that once you've tightened as much as you can, you cut that budget.
Let's talk about somehow accidentally releasing those earnings 3 hours early. Not entirely clear how that happened. Why does that set off such pandemonium?
Well, it sets off pandemonium because this is a huge stock. There's an awful lot of money invested in it. They had a market cap of more than $250 billion. Chances are, if you have a 401k, you're represented there. And you want to be, if you own the stock, you want to be watching when the earnings come out. That's why they pre-announce when they're going to release them. When they jump the gun like that, there were people able to get trades off before the stock was halted. They had an advantage. And, of course, the stock was down more than 10% yesterday in reaction to the bad news.
All right. Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And now on to Microsoft, which posted a 22% decline in profit. And as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, the next challenge is right around the corner.
Smartphones and tablets are taking a serious bite out of demand for regular old personal computers. Research firm IHS predicts PC sales will fall this year for the first time since 2001. The sluggish global economy isn't helping, and tech analyst Carl Howe with Yankee Group says PC fans may have been reluctant to buy a new computer before Microsoft's Windows 8 comes out next week. Howe says Microsoft is pegging its future to the tablet market. The new operating system is touchscreen friendly, and Microsoft is launching its own tablet computer, the Surface.
The tablet platform is a key initiative for Microsoft. If it doesn't succeed there, there's no place to point to say, oh, that's the big new future of Microsoft. This is a bet the company initiative.
Microsoft is hoping Windows 8 will boost PC sales, too. The company says there's more demand now than there was before its last Windows launch in 2009. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Well, it's a down day, and it gets more and more down the more and more I look at it as the morning wears on. At this moment, the Dow Industrial Average is down more than 1%. The NASDAQ is off 1.7%. Looks like it could be a rough day on Wall Street. European markets closed down pretty sharply despite the announcement of agreement on a plan for a European banking union. Let's check in on a few of those stocks. Google is continuing yesterday's double-digit slide, down almost 2% so far today. 2%, that is, if you didn't hear me. Microsoft is off almost 3%. And in the latest quarter, the global economy also took a toll on everything from jet engines to Big Macs. GE and McDonald's both disappointed with their earnings reports this morning. Both stocks are off around 3% so far today. Well, sales of existing homes fell in September by about 1.7%. On the upside, prices continued to increase as far fewer foreclosures and short sales hit the market. In fact, the National Association of Realtors says part of the reason for the drop in sales is that the number of homes on the market was extremely low in September. People have been reluctant to sell. Len Bloom at the investment bank Westwood Capital says that also goes for banks, which still have lots of foreclosures to offload.
There's 2.3 million homes that banks have in shadow inventory right now, many of which will be coming to market. So any increases we have in housing are going to be modest for that reason.
Still, this week did bring some more good news on housing, so let's reminisce about that. New home construction hit the highest point in September in more than 4 years. Target broke ground this week on the site of the former Cabrini Green, a Chicago housing project that was once synonymous with gang violence and urban decay. But the new store signals kind of a new start for the troubled location, as Carolyn O'Donovan reports for us from WBEZ.
For more than 50 years, thousands of Chicagoans called Cabrini Green home, but others called it one of the worst experiments in the history of public housing. Former residents like Ronald Crosby say the idea of a big box store here is hard to get used to.
Spent so many years, you know, hearing gunfire and shootings and things like that. It looked real weird. Yeah, because this was a terrible place to be.
The new Target store is part of a city plan that includes mixed-income townhouses. It's a concerted effort to draw wealthier residents to the neighborhood. But former Cabrini Green resident Paul Johnson says there's still a cloud of fear that hangs over the neighborhood.
They're hoping that them merely making this Target will make the upper crust people to flood over here in waves. And it's not gonna happen.
Still, Chicago's affluent Gold Coast neighborhood is barely a dozen blocks east, and downtown is only three Brown Line stops away. Chicago may be closer to a new Cabrini Green than its residents think. In Chicago, I'm Caroline O'Donovan for Marketplace.
The very wealthy have access to lots of things most of us don't, and that's pretty much just the way it goes. But how about when it's a matter of life or death? A unique voice on that question now from our Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk.
The American dream.
Millionaires, billionaires.
Class warfare.
Paycheck to paycheck.
We pay our fair share.
Private Health Management is not a health insurance company. It's not a hospital. But it provides some of the country's richest people with a service that is presumably worth a considerable price, even though the company doesn't disclose what those prices are. Short while ago, when I was feeling a little bit better, as you'll hear, I talked with Leslie Michelson, who is the CEO of Private Health Management. And Leslie, good to talk with you.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
So what exactly is it that people pay you, presumably big money, to do?
We regard our role as helping them navigate the medical maze. I personally have spent many decades studying the healthcare delivery system, trying to understand what goes well and understand what goes wrong. We help them identify the best specialists. People don't know how to do that. And we have what we call a global safety net, so that when people are traveling outside the United States and they develop a medical issue, they call us. We have interpreters, translators, and emergency experts to get them through it.
And our current healthcare system, even for the wealthy, evidently does not adequately provide these kinds of services?
No, it doesn't. People rail against a two-tiered system. My experience as someone who's been managing people's healthcare for almost three decades now is that it's a multi-tier system. The capacity to get the best care is not tightly correlated to one's net worth. We manage care for some exceptionally wealthy and accomplished and, frankly, brilliant people, and we find that they get care that isn't much better than anyone else's.
It feels like one thing to say rich people are free to spend as much as they like on health care for themselves and their families. It feels like it might be something else to actually be running a business with the primary mission that is to help wealthy people live longer and feel better than the rest of us. Are you making inequality worse in a pretty critical way?
I don't think we're doing that at all. In fact, I think what we have learned from serving people who have the wherewithal to compensate us for our services is fundamental truths about how to navigate the healthcare system that are applicable to everyone. So what we have done is I think we have broken the code, frankly. And we're now working very hard on figuring out how to reduce our costs to deliver our services so that we can increasingly provide it to broader portions of the population.
Leslie Michelson, CEO of Private Health Management. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, we're still talking healthcare here. Here's a little bit of news you can use. Most of you are probably familiar from your childhood days, maybe, with the five-second rule. You know, if you drop food on the floor, it's totally safe, right? As long as you pick it up before you count to five. Yeah, well, not surprisingly, the scientific basis of that is a little hazy. So scientists from Clorox and San Diego State University set out to test it using baby carrots on various surfaces like a kitchen countertop, the floor, a carpet. What a surprise. They found the five-second rule is way bogus. A kitchen countertop, interestingly, was germiest of all. Now, what these researchers don't tell us is the question that all of us here on the crew were naturally asking this morning. How many seconds do I have?
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
A major oil deal is in the works today. The state-controlled Russian firm Rosneft is reportedly ready to buy out a joint venture in Russia involving the British oil giant BP. The deal would create the world's biggest listed oil company, bigger than Exxon, bigger than Shell, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
If the deal goes ahead, it will extend the Kremlin's control over Russia's energy resources and further enhance the power of President Putin. He will effectively command half of Russia's entire oil output. The deal looks good for BP, too. The company would get shot of its joint venture partners, four Russian tycoons who've made life very difficult for the British company. Nick McGregor is an oil analyst with brokers Redmayne Bentley. He says BP will likely get a 10 or 15% stake in the new enlarged Rosneft.
This would offer them prime mover, partner of choice status for most of Rosneft's future dealings and future explorations, and that could be enormous for BP.
That could mean access to the untapped reserves in the Arctic. BP could also receive more than $10 billion in cash, and that'll come in handy as the company braces itself for more fines and damages over the Gulf of Mexico spill. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
India recently said it will allow more foreign investment in its retail sector. Yet today, Walmart is apparently taking fire there, accused of the apparent offense of investing in a chain of Indian supermarkets. For more, we've got the BBC's Rahul Tandon. He is in Calcutta. Hello, Rahul.
Hello, Jeff.
What are the accusations against Walmart? I mean, what rules is it potentially breaking here?
The accusations have come from a communist MP in the southern state of India, Kerala. Basically, what he's saying is that Walmart has already invested $100 million in an Indian company that owns 200 supermarkets across this country. And remember, though the Indian government has now tried to open up the multi-brand retail sector to foreign investment, as it stands at the moment, it's still not allowed. So the question is, has Walmart tried to sneak in through the back door and do this already?
And what does Walmart say about all this?
Walmart has denied the allegations. It said, look, it respects the laws here in India, and there is nothing that it has done to contravene those laws, as is its partner saying the same thing. And I think what it's important to point out, that while there's been a lot of reporting in India this morning that there is a formal investigation into this, whilst the letter has gone to the Indian Prime Minister, no formal investigation as yet has been launched. It's an informal one. But Jeff, what does this tell us? It tells us the high political stakes that are being played out by allowing companies like Walmart into India. Many, many people, like the shopkeeper in front of me, oppose it, and many politicians are trying to make political capital out of it.
And it seems like a good reminder that even though we in the West associate India with hosting a lot of foreign business activity, call centers and tech support, maybe the biggest examples, it's still a pretty closed economy in many ways.
Absolutely right there, Jeff. And as the Indian economy continues to slow down, it seems that the finance ministry feels that the only way to get that growth back up again is to open up many of its sectors, supermarkets, insurance, infrastructure, to foreign companies. The question that others are asking, though, politically, is that going to be a vote winner for you here in India?
All right. Rahul Tandon with the BBC in, quite obviously, Calcutta. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And just a couple quick final items here. Killington Ski Resort in Vermont. If you live in New England, maybe you've heard of it. It's one of the largest ski hills in the region. And this year, eco-conscious skiers can hang a little bit more loose, knowing that they're being powered to the top of the mountain using cow manure. Vermont's a big dairy state, right? So Killington bought into a renewable energy program from the local utility that lets bacteria feed on barn waste to generate methane. Pretty slick all around, I would say. And finally, a story, a short story, of some new shoes for Igor. America's tallest man, Igor Volkovinsky. He's 7'8". He lives in Rochester, Minnesota, and he has a heck of a time finding shoes for his size 24 super wide feet. So yesterday, Reebok delivered three pair of giant custom-made Igors with his name even stitched just like that on the back. And Igor says they are as comfortable as, quote, walking on mattresses, which, given the size of the shoes, I think is about right. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, heading home to get some rest. And we come to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.